We join Nicole Lowe now from Cape Town, and he's the technical editor of Car Magazine. We're taking your calls as well. Before we cut across to Parliament, so give us a call if you're having mechanical issues with your vehicle or any other questions that you may have on 011-883-0702. Nicole, hello.
Hello, Zanya, our listeners.
Yes, it's a big day, so we've had to move you around a little bit.
Yeah, so much tension in the country. I think let's relax a bit with a bit of a car talk.
Exactly. And on a technological front today, electric cars, they seem to be catching up. What is happening as far as innovations are concerned?
Yes, Azania. Electric cars, two big problems with electric cars. One is range, the limited range you can drive on a single charge.
Mm-hmm.
If you look at the cars in South Africa, i3 and the Nissan Leaf, you can get about 150 to 200 kilometers on a single charge. The other one, obviously, is cost. The technology is still quite expensive. But now, there's a record being set by the Tesla Owners Club of Italy that just come out. And they've beat the world record of the longest distance driven on a single charge. And can you guess how many kilometers they've driven, Azania?
Oh, jeez, Nicole, I'm always so bad at this. How much did they cover?
I'll help you. Over 1,000 kilometers on a single charge. So actually 1,078 kilometers on a single charge.
Now, wow, that's just outside Cape Town. Like it takes
almost.
Yeah.
So the car was a Tesla Model S. It's got a huge battery pack. They call it the P100D. It's got a 100 kilowatt hour battery pack. Now, obviously, electric cars haven't got a tank size. We can't talk about petrol or diesel tank size. It's got a battery pack size. You think about the Nissan Leaf, it's got about a 24-hour battery pack.
Mm-hmm.
And there's Tesla's got a 100 kilowatt-hour battery pack, so four times the size of a Nissan Leaf.
Mm-hmm.
So that all sort of explains why they get so much distance, but also they've driven at an average speed of 40 kilometers per hour.
Oh, no, come
slow.
On.
But I still think it's a very impressive feat. If you work out the energy cost in rands, if you work on Eskom rate of 1 rand 50 per kilowatt-hour, it means their 1,000 kilometers only cost them 147 rands, which I think is great.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
For electric cars. And then if you look at the performance figures of that specific model, 0 to 100 in 2.7 seconds. So how's that for efficiency and performance?
That's not too bad. That's not bad at all. So the speed at which you travel also has an impact on the life of the battery.
Yes, definitely. So electric cars are definitely, I think they're catching on pretty quickly. Another example I can give you is that the Nürburgring lap times are the holy grail for petrol heads to see how fast a car is. That's a 20-kilometer lap. And at the moment, the record holder is a car called NIO EP9, which is an electric vehicle with 1,000 kilowatts, did a lap time of 6 minutes and 45. That is faster than any Ferrari, Porsche, Lamborghini, you name it,
mm-hmm.
around the Nürburgring. So the outright production car lap record is actually held by electric car on the Nürburgring. So that just gives you another example.
Right. Cannot wait for electric autonomous vehicles. That's the future for sure. So let's take calls, Nicole. If you have questions about electric cars, what would you like to know? But also your own vehicle, if you're having problems with it, give us a call. Prince in Witbank, good afternoon.
Hello, Zanya.
I
use a 1996 Honda Ballard. It's a petrol. It's a 1.6i.
Yeah.
I have literally been to several mechanics, and they've not been able to sort this out. Whenever I am approaching a slope, like an incline, like going down, when I begin to brake, I noticed that my steering begins to wobble, like it begins to shake.
Mm-hmm.
I changed the brake pad. I changed the disc several times. I even skimmed the new disc that I bought.
But it's still
shakes. I even changed the engine mounting underneath, because they suggested that the engine mounting might be the cause why it's wobbling.
Mm.
Can Nick assist me here? Like this is the third disc I'm buying.
Yeah.
The third disc. And whenever I'm braking, it begins to wobble, it begins to shake.
Mm. And it's only when you're on a decline. It doesn't happen on a flat road.
It happens on a flat road, but
not to the same severity. Okay.
It's worse on a decline.
All right. And that's a great car as well. The box shape, right? The square one at the back. That's really, it's a really cool car. So
it is. I mean, I have another car, but my friends think I'm a jerk. Like, I'm not changing this car because it's old. But I like it because I just like it.
Nicole, what do you think this could be due to?
Yeah, it's very strange. Normally, a wobble of the steering wheel during braking is what we call a brake shudder. And the cure for that is actually new discs and pads. But now if the caller says he has changed that so many times and still got the same symptom, just remember one thing. Skimming a disc will never resolve a brake shudder. You need new discs and new pads. Hopefully, they're OEM spec and they're good quality discs and pads. I just hope that there isn't a problem with the braking system, that it maybe runs on and overheats, and maybe it warps the new discs just after fitting. Maybe that is the cause. But say it isn't discs and pads, what else can it be? So what I'm thinking of, check all your suspension bushes. Engine mounts would have nothing to do with that, unfortunately, but suspension bushes, your steering rack, see if there's any play anywhere in that system there. So the bushes on the suspension mounts, if there's any play, if you jack up the car and there's movement either the left wheel or right wheel, if you can move it around in the longitudinal or lateral direction, it means there's play in one of the suspension bushes, and maybe the braking force is causing like a cyclic behavior on that, and that gives you the shot in the steering wheel. But as I say, this is a bit abnormal. Normally, it is just discs, new discs and pads. But you can check what I've also mentioned now.
All right. Prince, will you try that?
Thanks a lot. Yeah.
Thank you. There's an area where you can look. Next, we have Robert calling from Benoni. Hi, Robert.
Good afternoon, Nicole and Alexandra. I'd like to know, we have a Volvo XC60, 5 years up and 52,000 k's on the clock. Is it worth taking the extended warranty that the Volvo franchise offer?
You said it's 152,000 kilometers.
No, 52,000.
52,000 and you want an extended warranty on it?
Yeah, is it worth taking it?
Okay, Nicole?
It all depends, Robert, on your financial situation, because I think we've discussed this before many times. These additional plans are like medical aid. You pay because you cannot afford a big failure if it happens. But most of the time, you actually don't have a failure and you pay for somebody else's fixes to happen. It's very much the same. It's a statistical thing on medical aid. So if I say, if you cannot afford a big failure, then that's the wisest thing to do, is go for these additional plans. Mm-hmm. But then you have to read the small print very carefully, because they don't cover everything. So make sure you know what you pay for. But what I always say is, if you can afford it, maybe put aside just a bit of money every month and then weigh that up to the payment, the monthly payment, and see how it works out. But if you're a pensioner, you cannot afford a big failure, that's sometimes a safety net.
Right. Okay. So a little fund on the side or an extended warranty, Robert. Those seem to be your options. Good luck.
Okay. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Robert and Benoni. Pete, you're calling from Soweto. Hi.
Hi.
Yes, Pete.
How are you?
Very good, and you?
Thanks. Ma'am, I'm driving a Nissan Almera. For the second time, it has been busting pipes, the water pipes.
Mm-hmm.
And I even went to an extent, somebody advised me to take out the thermostat. Mm. And I took out the thermostat in the first burst, and then the second one happened again. I packed it. I wonder what is the cause.
So when you replaced the thermostat, it stopped, and then it happened again?
No. I didn't replace the thermostat. Oh. It's still out, but it still continued.
Well, you took it out. All right, and the water continues to come out. Nicole?
No, it burst the pipes. The pipes, they are tuned, boom, then water comes out.
Oh, jeez. Nicole?
Mm.
Yeah, okay. First of all, you need to ensure that the pipes are in a good condition. They're all flexible. They're all what they should be. I mean, pipes that are cracked and so on, they would eventually go. So just make sure your pipe conditions is good all throughout the cooling system. Mm. But then what it sounds like is there's some pressure buildup in the system that is more than the OEM designed for. So that is a bit worrying to me, because your water pump shouldn't be able to provide enough pressure to burst the hoses. Hmm. There's something else that builds pressure in the cooling system. And sometimes what can happen, if your head gasket is going, your combustion gases is actually going into the cooling system and then over-pressurizing the system. So maybe you take the car to a radiator place. They can do checks on the cooling system to check if there's combustion gases inside that fluid. You can do compression checks as well on the engine. You just want to rule out that head gasket that's gone, because that will definitely then and also lead to overheating and all kind of things. But there's definitely something else going on. You mentioned you took out the thermostat. Now, the thermostat's the reason why you have a thermostat is it helps the warm-up phase and it keeps the engine at the 90-degree coolant level. If you take that thermostat out and you run it like that, then the coolant flow is maximum. Mm. And if you're on the motorway and so on, your engine might actually run too cool. It might run at like 60 or 50 degrees, which will cause more wear on your engine because it needs to run at optimum temperatures for the tolerances in the engine to be 100%. You'll also use a bit more fuel because there will be more engine friction. So it's never a good idea to take out the thermostat permanently. Rather try and fix the root cause. And I've got a feeling that it might be a head gasket on the way out.
All right. Pete, there you have it. Yeah.
Thanks,
Thank you. That's Pete out in Soweto. Nicole, we take a break. We come back to more of your calls. Erica in Carltonville and Paul Ralph will be back with your questions for Nicole. We're back to the lines now with Nicole Lowe, the technical editor of Car Magazine. And let's go to Ralph in Benoni. Ralph, you have some suggestions for our earlier caller whose car shudders on the way down.
Yes. Mm. Yes, the gent with the Honda Millard.
Yes.
I had a similar experience with my 2012 Toyota Corolla.
Uh-huh.
And I replaced disc pads, I replaced the disc, and I just didn't know what to do. And mine was just at 110 kilometers an hour. 115 it went away, and under 100 the shutter went away. Then I didn't know what to do. And then I went to a place, a little shop in Kempton Park, in Pretoria Road, I won't mention the name, I actually can't remember, and they jacked my car up, and the inner CV joints, the guy put my car on a hoist, and he said, look at that, they finished.
Mm.
The inner CVs, and they replaced the CV joints, and I'm happily ever after.
Right,
so
okay.
I thought I might just share that.
Thank you. And I hope he's still listening. Thank you, Ralph.
Okay.
Right. So that's Ralph in Benoni with the solution there. And then Emil in Randburg. Hi.
Hi, good day. I just want to know if South Africa is ready for electric cars in terms of the road ordinances, instead of in terms of the roadworthiness rules.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just thinking, you know, you're driving around at 40 kilometers an hour, it might be beautiful to commute to the shopping center and back, but what about, you know, which road can you take one of these electric cars? I'm quite keen to take one.
Yeah. Nicole, your thoughts on this? Because regulation hasn't caught up yet.
Remember that 40 kilometers per hour was just the average speed for the record. That Tesla Model S can drive a lot faster than that. I'm speaking under correction, but I think top speed is over 200 kilometers per hour. So, the 40 km per hour is just that. Obviously, the car, electric car, needs to adhere to all the road regulatory conditions before it can be released as a production car. That includes safety as well. So, electric cars, before you can buy them, they need to be able to pass all the stringent crash testing, all those safety kind of tests. And, they will be on par from a regulatory point of view to the internal combustion engines cars you have today. So, there would be no difference there.
All right, Emil, thank you for that question. Erica, you're out in Carltonville. You're having a start-stop problem with your car.
Yes, Zomia. My problem is when I drive my car and I go to town and I'll stop at a couple of places, after about the third time I try and start my car, it refuses to start.
What kind of system is it? Which car and what kind of system is it?
Oh, it's a very old, it's a 1993 Hyundai Elantra.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just sit there and I wait for about 20 minutes.
Whoa.
And then eventually it starts. I have had it at the garage, but, it's just doing it again.
Yes. What's causing this, Nicole?
Just a quick question there. When it doesn't want to start, if you turn the key, does it actually crank the engine? Do you hear the engine cranking all the time, or is it just not firing?
No, it doesn't crank at all.
So when you turn the key, nothing happens?
Just silence.
Yeah.
That's very strange. If the engine doesn't turn over at all when you turn the key, it sounds to me like an electrical problem of some sort, which can actually also be an immobilizer problem. Immobilizer of the car will prevent the engine from starting when you turn the key. The vehicle is quite old. If it was a more modern car, I could even say that maybe the key isn't recognized by the engine control unit. Some of these modern keys got a transponder that needs to be seen before it will allow to crank the engine. But I think that model year, that wasn't the case still. So it's definitely an electrical problem. An auto electrician should be able to check that out fairly quickly, because if you turn the key, then the solenoid that connects to the starter motor should engage, and it should engage the starter motor. If that signal is not getting there, there must be a reason for it. And the most obvious reason is some kind of immobilizer that's kicking in there. Otherwise, it's definitely an electrical fault of some sort. If it starts fine other times, it's very strange to me that it sounds like it can actually be also a loose connection, maybe.
Could you look at changing the starter as well?
Yeah, the starter can actually just start or not, but an auto electrician will be able to measure if the signal is getting to the starter motor, number one. If it's not, then obviously the fault is before that. But it can be if a starter motor, but yeah, you wouldn't expect the electric motor to work one time and then not the other. Okay. I would suggest an immobilizer or electrical problem.
All right. Nicole, thank you so much. Should we continue with the hard news of the day? Thank you for the reprieve.
Thanks, Azania. Thank you very
Nicole
much.
Nicole Lowe, the technical editor of Car Magazine.